space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
One of our most faithful servants. It gives us light. It starts our cars. Has unlimited in aviation. Circle globe with entertainment. It cooks and refrigerates our food. These represent few of the innumerable applications of electricity. Electricity at work. But what is electricity, and where does it come from? To answer these questions, let's look in on the world of electrons. The entire universe is composed of matter. A basic concept of the structure of matter is essential for the understanding of electricity. because the very force that holds matter together has an electrical nature. There are many different substances, each a combination of some of the 92 known chemical elements. Just as yeast, flour, salt, sugar, and shortening are the ingredients used in making bread, so are the 92 elements the ingredients of all matter. And if one of these elements is reduced to its purest, final form, its smallest unit would be an atom. No one has ever seen inside an atom. However, we think of it as a system of electrons circulating around a heavy nucleus at almost inconceivable speeds. In order to explain the principles with which we are concerned in this story, let's assume that we can stop the action within the atom. And further, let's acknowledge that this is a symbol representing the atom and not an attempt to show it as it actually is. It is impossible to show the correct relative proportions of an atom on this screen. For example, if an atom could be as large as the United States, one of its electrons would be only about 100 feet across. Therefore, to tell our story, we must resort to a symbol. Then we can think of the atom as being a group of relatively light, small particles arranged around a heavy nucleus. These are particles of electric energy. The lighter ones, the electrons, are negative electric charges. And the heavier one, the nucleus, carries positive charges. Normally, a state of balance is maintained within the atom by a positive charge in the nucleus equal to the total negative charge of the electrons. And when the atom contains its normal number of electrons, it is said to be in electrical balance, to be in a neutral electrical condition. It is possible, however, to disturb this normal balance, whereupon the unbalanced atom assumes an electric charge. Too many electrons will produce a negative charge. Too few will throw the balance onto the positive side. In order to visualize better the effect of this, let's introduce a color code in which the positive charge, or an absence of electrons, is represented with red, and the negative charge, a predominance of electrons, with blue. Then an object that is in electrical balance will be purple, an equal part of each of the positive and negative charges. We have been concerned so far with the electrons within individual atoms. Now let's see what happens when two or more neutral atoms come together. The outside electrons will no longer move exclusively within their original atoms, but will circulate about both atoms at once. And if we bring many such atoms close together, as in a piece of metal, then many electrons detach themselves from their original atoms and move freely throughout the metal. As long as the metal has its normal number of electrons, it is electrically neutral. But like an individual atom, it can lose some of its electrons and become positively charged, or it can pick up more than its normal number of electrons to become negatively charged. The electrons always try to get from a negatively charged body to one that is positively charged in relation to it. And if they're brought together, the electrons will flow from one to the other until both objects are equally charged. The establishment of unbalanced charges in matter is, in all instances, the principle of the generation of electricity. To illustrate further this principle, let's analyze the action within a cell, a simple source of electric energy. A piece of zinc is suspended in a suitable container. Its atoms are neutral until a chemical solution is added. Then some of the zinc atoms go into the solution, leaving a few of their electrons behind in the metal. The zinc becomes strongly negatively charged. Now a piece of electrically neutral copper is put in a chemical solution in another container. The copper will become very weakly negative. Since the copper has a smaller negative charge, it is positive with respect to the zinc. And if the two metals are connected, the electrons will surge from the zinc to the copper, and the charges will become equalized. This momentary current has little practical value. However, if we now connect the solutions, the charges in the solutions will become equalized, and the metals or terminals will be charged. We will then have an unbalanced condition of the electrons in the metals capable of producing a continuous flow of useful electric current. All of the work performed by electricity requires a flow of current. So let's see what principles are involved when current flows. There are three related to the flow of electricity. They are pressure or voltage, current intensity, and resistance. First, let us consider pressure. With nature always trying to maintain an electrical balance, there is a tendency for any negatively charged object to throw off or repel its excess of electrons, and for a positively charged object to attract electrons. This urge to maintain an electrical balance is potential electric energy. And since this potential energy is a repelling and attracting urge caused by opposite charges, its force or pressure is equal to the difference in the charges. It is called the difference in potential or potential difference. The unit of pressure or potential difference is the volt. The voltage, then, is always the potential difference at the negative and positive terminals of the source of the electric energy. It represents the difference between the number of extra electrons at the two terminals. And when a suitable path is provided, the potential difference causes the electrons or current to flow from one terminal through the conductor to the other terminal. To explain how this works, let's review the action of the atoms and their electrons in a piece of metal where we saw swarms of electrons moving freely in all directions about the atoms. Substances in which this takes place are good conductors of electricity. If an outside electric pressure or voltage is applied to a conductor, the electrons will move predominantly in one direction. The effect is that electrons move from the negative to the positive terminal. This is the electric current. The unit of electric current is the ampere. 1 ampere. Now hold on to your hat. 6,300,000,000,000,000,000 electrons passing any given point in 1 second. Current or amperage, then, is the number of electrons that pass a given point in a given time. And now the third factor, resistance. This factor is controlled by the nature of the material through which the electrons flow. Again, going back to the motion of electrons in a metal, we said that they moved freely about and among the atoms. However, even in the best of conductors, some of the electrons collide with the atoms, tending to retard the movement of the electrons. This is the cause of electric resistance. Collisions are more probable in some metals than in others. Therefore, different metals offer different degrees of resistance to the flow of electrons. For example, copper has low resistance. It permits the electrons to flow freely with few collisions and is therefore a good conductor. Iron offers more resistance than copper. Collisions with the atoms are more frequent. In some substances, no electrons are free to move around as in the metal. All of the electrons stay with their atoms so that no current can flow. These substances are the insulators, glass, porcelain, rubber, and many others. The collisions that the electrons have with the atoms set the atoms into more violent vibration. This makes the metal hotter. If there are enough of these collisions, the metal will radiate heat and light. Heat and light from electrical sources, then, can be obtained as the result of resistance in some metals. The unit of resistance is the ohm. Its value is best understood when its relation to the other factors is explained. A pressure of 1 volt produces a current of 1 ampere through a resistance of 1 ohm. Whatever the source or the magnitude of electric energy, these factors always have the same relation to each other. So, in order to supply our great demands for electric power, we must have facilities for generating great currents at sufficient pressures to overcome the resistance of the lines, as well as to do the work. Power for industry, transportation, and light, as well as for many other conveniences we use in our daily lives. Our own sources of current able to perform these amounts of work are the electromagnetic generators. In order to explain the manner in which electricity is produced by electromagnetic generators and used in most electrical machinery...
Aw, crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. Somehow or another, that last part of that podcast got shut off there. I think Sam's got a mind of its own that might have got bored and wanted to move on. Anyway, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but 4 separate chat rooms. As well as if you want to go over and visit with the People for People radio network, then jump on there, scroll down on that super chat and you'll see a link, a banner ad for People for People that you can go over there and also go say hi to Wolf Spirit Radio as well. And so with that said, Understanding Energy, Mad Science Show is live. Woohoo! So, made me some show notes here. I wanted to play that kind of that podcast for just a basic understanding of how electricity functions and all that kind of stuff. At least the standard model so that everybody gets a general idea of what's going on. I spent a lot of time studying up different ways to generate electricity, so my mind sees everything mechanically. So when I started off, I was thinking about how it is. Well, first I got to kind of backtrack here. Years ago, I got in a fight with a power company. got behind on a doggone light bill, missed a shut-off notice by one day, and they shut my power off. Well, at that particular point in time, I was on what was known as a level payment plan. Basically, it's one set fee. They just take your one of your bills, and they estimate what you might use in the heaviest part of the year, and they'll send your bill out every month. So that you're not surprised that your bill being small one month and then next month it's really high or anything like that, so that you got a set rate that you pay. And supposedly the way it works out, you end up with a a doggone surplus, you know, extra money, so you actually end up with credit over the deal if it works out the way they said it would. But anyway, so shut my power off, and I called up the power company, and I asked them, I said, what's it going to take to get my power back on? And they said, well, you got to pay your entire bill up current plus a $700 deposit. And I'm like, what? And, of course, at that time, my entire bill plus the $700 deposit would have been a little bit over $2,000. And I'm like, how in the heck am I going to come up with that kind of money? And so, you know, anyway, I tried negotiating with them and everything, and their employees not only were rude to me and saying, well, you know, you should have paid your bill or whatever, and I'm trying to tell them, you know, hey, this is troubled times out here. Gas was like $4 a gallon at the time, and so, you know, I'm sitting there trying to run these electric generators, gas generators, to try to keep the freezer going and, you know, some lights and stuff on, and it was just a mess. These old generators weren't very good to begin with. And so, you know, I kept calling them up every day, trying to get them to negotiate with me, you know, do something. And they weren't having any part of it. So anyway, to make a long story short, after the way they treated my family, I wrote a letter to the head of the power company. And I said, look, because of the way you treated my family in our time of need, I got to back up again. So anyway, it took me a long time to get my power back on. I actually had to get some assistance to get my power back on, which, you know, was a pretty tough deal. Anyway, I got my power back on. They made a mistake and they shut me or turned me on before they charged or made me pay the deposit. So, under the current laws where I'm at, you can't shut somebody off for a deposit once you turn them on. So, that was a good thing. Anyway, so I wrote a letter to the head of the power company, and I said, because of the way you treated my family in our time of need, didn't have no kind of safety net or fallback plan for just such an emergency that somebody fall behind. Because I told him, I said, if you look and see my bill is current always. It's just this one particular incident where my bill got, behind. And so, I said, because of the way you treated my family and the way that your employees were disrespectful to me on the, on the phone and the way they talked to me like a dog or whatever, I said, I'm going to dedicate the rest of my entire life to studying everything that there is to know about alternative energy. And when I get that accomplished, I'm going to share it with each and every one of your customers for free. So that when your wallet gets thin, you're going to have me to blame for it. And that's what kind of started me off on the journey. You know, and I started studying everything about energy. Everything about how water moves, how any kind of energy moves, physics and you name it. Just whatever that had to do with energy, I was looking it up and I was studying it. And so, to figure out possible methods to actually generate electricity, I first started off building what some people would classify as alternators. Basically, I started off using magnetos off of weed eaters and lawn mowers, and I built custom-made flywheels that would pulse these and shoot out a high-voltage arc across the deal and charge capacitors with it. And then I also took out these little transformers out of the fish tank air pumps. Basically, these are little magnetic transformers that more like electromagnets that kind of sends out a magnetic wave, and there's a little armature that has a magnet glued to the end of it that goes to a diaphragm, and whenever you plug that into AC current, it causes the magnet to vibrate back and forth, pushing up and down the diaphragm, which then in turn puts air into your fish tank. Well, these things are perfect already out of the gate for using as basically the equivalent of that magneto that was on the lawnmowers and on the weed eaters, that when you pass a magnet across there to produce electricity. And so I put two different versions of this together, one with the magneto off of the lawnmower for a high voltage arc, and the other one for producing just your standard type of electricity. But what I figured out when I was doing all this was that I wasn't getting enough current to be able to run anything. But what I was seeing is I was getting an increase in voltage, starting off from a 12-volt car battery running these. What I did was I took and got some 12-volt electric motors out of fans out of the heater box in your car, because my view was that if I could generate electricity using 12 volts and enough electricity to be able to run a decent load, then anybody could come up with a car battery. And so if I could develop a generator that would actually use a car battery as the initial source of input to get things started, and even contemplated at that particular time about doing an electric motor generator that would basically put some juice back in the battery and keep the battery charged up on the way, which I still believe is possible. I just don't figure we've actually got to the point where without an outside force like a solar power added to it, when you combine multiple systems to keep things charged up, then that would be the way to go. The other way would be more classified as like perpetual motion style type of generator. But nonetheless, I still to this day believe it's possible with some added features to a motor generator. But either way, you still had to get around the lens effect and the cogging effect that you get whenever you're passing magnets past a coil and so on. But so that it kind of even led me into even more studies about Tesla technology, how Tesla was able to, you know, flip a knife switch and pulse a coil that in turn, the faster he did that, that he would get surges of power up into the thousands of volts and so on down the line. But then it was a case of, how do you take this high voltage and actually turn it back into usable current again? How can you charge and discharge capacitor banks and charge batteries in order to be able to put it back into usable current again? And so that got me to digging deeper, and then I started gaining an understanding about how energy actually travels, plus how the power company was actually doing it. Because the power that comes down the power line, you could not use in your electrical system in your house. It's just not possible because it's going in too high of a voltage and too high frequency, and they need that power to be up that high voltage and high frequency in order to be able to push it further down the power line in order to get it out to all their customers. So when they're running that AC current and they're pushing it out to miles away from where the generator is, they need to be able to do it in the most efficient manner, because all these different materials, even copper, will show some sort of resistance, and the voltage and everything will decrease the farther you get away from it, and won't be very strong. And then they would basically have a good product for their customers, such as the electricity used in their house. Anyway, they resolved all that. The trick was figuring out how they resolved all that. The answer came in how Tesla's, basically his wireless energy transfer tower, the Tesla coil, how it functioned. How he had an earth ground connected to it, and how he was able to use these pulses to actually bait energy out of the earth. Because when you have a positive charge, negative charges want to go to wherever the positive charge is. So if you're pulsing the primary of the Tesla coil, and it's energizing the secondary, all that energy is building up on the secondary, which in turn goes up to the top load, which is the very tip top of the deal, and basically starts to pressurize, energize that with a big old positive charge up there, which wants to drag negative electrons from the earth out to the top. Once that top load finally gets, so incredibly charged, all that energy is looking for a path to ground because nature's trying to balance it back out. And so when the top load gets fully charged and everything, and it begins to ionize all the air in the surrounding area, basically making it conductive, building a bridge to a path to ground. So it's going to take the shortest path to ground it can find. And you'll see these quite literally look like lightning bolts coming out of top. Some people call it breakout. You know, it's that real cool lightning show that you see when the Tesla coil's running. Well, the power company figured that out. They also figured out how to, when they're sending this high frequency out, to be able to step it back down using the known physics, such as resistance and a number of turn on the windings and stuff like that, and even being able to control the temperature, keep it from reaching a thermal breakdown and the insulation on the copper wire failing, they've submerged them in oil. So I posted a video in the chat room over to superchat.html so that you could see inside of one of those transformers that actually goes on top of the light poles that you use your electricity from. So basically that steps that energy back down. It kind of changes it, slows it down, stores it like a capacitor, basically puts that energy back into a form that you can actually now use inside your house at lower voltages and the proper current and wattage and amperage and all that kind of jazz. So anyway, going back to how I started the study, was I built these little motor generator kind of things where, you know, I'm using a 12-volt battery to spin electric motor, which spent a homemade rotor that I had put magnets in there. You know, the magnets I was getting out of old flywheels, it's kind of hard to get them out because that aluminum that they use, the weed eater flywheels, but there's little pole pieces in there that go on each side of the magnet that change that north to south, you know, one space in one direction on the magnet and one station on the opposite direction, because you need that change from north to south to get the electron flow in the coils of wire. And so I was recovering some of these pole pieces out of there, and then I took four sets of pole pieces and put them into a mold with two-part epoxy resin and made my own homemade flywheel so that I could spin this around multiple coils, whether they be the magnetos from the weed eaters or riding lawnmower motors or the fish tank air pump coils. Magnetos, and I got two different types of voltages, two different types of electricity going on now. One would be a high voltage AC with low current because of the types of windings that's inside the little magnetos out of the fish tank air pumps. I mean, it's like real thin wire. And so in the process of that, it made me realize that this wire is acting like a pipe in the plumbing, that you need a thicker wire if you want more current to be able to flow through this. And so it gave me even greater understanding on this deal. Also, in the process of running the one that had the magnetos, I saw that while I'm getting the same type of energy, it's not in the AC current form. It's more like a DC pulse every time this thing charges up and then snaps across to the spark gap to the other side that charged the capacitor up. So I knew there was at least two separate ways that I could take this same energy, change it around, and then make it do something else. Well, I tried seeing how many things that I could actually run off of these types of generators, and was realizing that I couldn't get quite the amount of current that I needed from these particular style of systems in order to be able to make a generator that's going to be efficient enough for your average Joe to be able to run their house with and stuff. So keep in mind, these are miniature prototypes made out of junk and whatever I could scrape up from used parts and stuff like that. Another one of the keys of the problem that I was going with was the fact that nothing was precision. I couldn't get the perfect gap between each one of the magnetos. The flywheel wasn't perfectly balanced, and so it would wobble and had trouble, so it wasn't as efficient as it could be. So that was another thing I added to my list there of things that needed, was to be able to make these things precision, be able to run the tests necessary to figure out what I needed to do to make this work. And so it was a long journey. In the process of studying Tesla's technology and in the process of making what some people would call alternators or DC generators or whatever, these particular three things right here finally got me into understanding about the differences of energies and what you can actually do with that energy. See, the physics say energy can neither be created nor destroyed. However, you can take this energy and you can change it to a completely different form. Because in the process of running these generators, every time I put them under a load, I could actually physically watch as they would bog the generator down, making that electric motor that was running the generator have to work harder, therefore drawing more amperage from the batteries. And so I had to figure out a way to, not violate the lens effect, but to turn the lens effect into such a weak and insignificant form that it would not cause that electric motor to work any harder than it had to just to run the electric motor. Because once you put it under a load, then that allowed that magnetic field to get stronger and stronger, until it was literally making a second magnetic field that was acting like a brake on the armature and slowing it down. And so that was counterproductive to what it was that I was trying to do. So that's what finally ended up getting me into plasma technology, because as I studied how Tesla technology actually functioned, and the fact that you could hold a fluorescent light bulb or a gas-filled light bulb anywhere within that field, and you could energize that gas into the fourth state of matter being plasma, which also put off visible light, so I knew that there was heat involved as well, then that got me to thinking about things a little bit more deeper. See, most of the appliances that we run, the heat is a byproduct of using any type of energy. And so since heat is a byproduct of using any type of energy, that gives us a problem in certain places, because we don't want our transistors to get too hot, because they only have a certain degree at temperature where they will actually reach a thermal breakdown and the materials will fail, therefore your device will fail. And so you had to figure out a way to not allow that to get hot. Well, in all these different types of machinery, everything we're talking about, whether it be a generator, motor or electric motor, or computer systems or whatever, heat was a problem, because heat is what destroys the insulation on the wires, heat destroys circuitry and all that kind of stuff. And so it's really super simple to generate heat when you understand the physics of what's going on. The heat comes from a bunch of different aspects of generating electricity, one of which be eddy currents and resistance and different things like that. or even to the extent of energizing gas into plasma when, you know, these atoms are... molecules or whatever are releasing their electrons and everything's banging into each other and it's producing friction, which in turn produces heat. So it's really super simple if you understand the physics and what's going on with electricity or any energy for that matter to generate heat. Heat's normally a bad thing because it's friction, it's wearing of parts, and you have to have second systems like in an internal combustion engine. You have to have a oil system to keep to take that heat away from the metal parts and, you know, push that heat out into the atmosphere away from the engine itself. And so also, that gave me another understanding about other things. Every single device out there, every single material has a thermal breakdown point to which it will fail. It will become soft and harder parts will wear into it, and the temperature will actually change the viscosity of oils and make it too thin to do its job or to efficiently transfer heat away from the device that you're trying to keep cool. And so all these things through all these years have been playing factors into the direction that I took alternative energy, as far as making things and explaining to people how efficiency is the big deal, how we can actually make things better so that they would be able to do the same job. See, All we have done, every single bit of this energy, each one of these projects was running off of a 12 volt battery. So I knew my input, and I knew my maximum output of that battery, and so I had a range within there of, you know, how fast that battery would drain or how much energy was available in that battery, and knew that if I exceeded a certain point, then that means I have to start putting a charge back to that battery. And I got an idea how long that battery would last under different circumstances using different devices that I put together. But the whole concept was, that was going to be my starting point, was a 12-volt battery, because 12-volt batteries are not only easy to produce, they're easy to get a hold of, it's already off the store shelf, and if somebody could figure out a way to basically take any car battery and turn it into a system that would run an inverter-style circuitry without draining that battery, or be able to take the energy from that battery and transfer it into a completely different form, so that it wouldn't, drain more energy out of that battery than necessary to get the energy that you wanted to do the work that you needed. And so, basically, I had a thought in my mind a second ago, and it just like up and disappeared. So anyway, nature wants to balance itself back out. That's all we're doing. We're taking energy and we're disrupting nature. We're moving more electrons one way than we are another way. And in that process, with the magnetic fields or the amount of current or power that we're using from whichever direction, nature always wants to seek that balance out. And that balance, in between that balance with the electron flow and the magnetic fields interaction and so on, inducing a current to produce a magnetic field, that interaction is what we use to get work done, whether it be resistance by pushing too much current through a wire that is resistive to electron flow or current flow, then we're able to generate heat, which generates the light that we see, so we ain't stubbing our toe on the coffee table as we're going through the house or whatever in the dark. And so now we got an understanding of energy. That's the first and the biggest hurdle to get past, to understand how this energy is actually traveling, and even to the extent of which direction it's traveling as well. Because if you listen to science, they'll say that energy travels from positive to negative, but then in the next breath they'll say, but the other people think it's traveling from negative to positive. Nonetheless, it's going down the wire like water. Well, you want it to go towards your load that you're running. And so if you've got one or two wires, and these two wires are basically, all one solid wire, then you got like a seesaw going on when you got AC current, because it's going back and forth through that wire and moving those, and that's how you get nature off balance and get work done with AC current. Now, with a little bit of changes, you can actually force the electron flow in one specific direction, and then you actually end up with DC current. But then it gets you to thinking about how these transformers are actually designed. We know which way the current flows through these wires, and how that the current's actually going back into the wire. You know, instead of like a seesaw with AC current, you get it going in one direction for a DC current. And so we got an idea how this energy is actually traveling in there. And so what if we wanted to take a piece out of the equation that would be, if I wanted to get DC current out of an AC transformer, how would I be able to do that? Well, one possible theory as far as how to do that would be to have two separate transformers and have these two separate transformers going in opposite directions, so that as that seesaw effect's happening, you have a constant flow coming out of each one of these wires that you're actually pulling your load from. So the current's always flowing in the same direction down the two wires that's going to your load, and then eventually back to the generator itself. So while as complex as that sounds, it's not as it's not as difficult if you understand basically, you know, why pipes and plumbing's, how you're sending you're splitting that off into two separate directions and such. But anyway, so I wanted to be able to take this energy and to try to avoid the lens effect that you get from inducing the current into a two wire going in through a load, or another coil of wire that you're trying to pulse to pull power off of a secondary that it's next to. And the moment you turn that generator on and you put a load on there, those electrons were able to flow out of the generator into your load, back into the generator, producing a second magnetic field. That poses a problem. It doesn't pose a problem if you have enough force behind the horsepower behind the motor that you're using to turn your generator. It only poses a problem when you put too much, you plug too much stuff in there, because now you're allowing a lot more electrons to get back faster, and the field gets stronger until it finally gets down to the point where that second field is equaling out to the first field, and it's producing a braking effect that's slowing down the armature, which then in turn produces more torque necessary to turn that rotor that it did when it was just turned freely, which transfers that load into the engine itself, which causes the engine to have to run harder and use more fuel in order to try to get past that force that's fighting against it. So if you could take this same doggone generator and you could move the energy that you wanted away from that generator and not have it come back into that generator in any significant amount whatsoever, then you would not completely violate the lens effect, but you would drastically reduce it to the extent that not enough of that energy could make it back into that generator head that would produce the torque that would cause that generator to have to bog down. Now, Gerard Morin out there, he's pretty much figured out a way to move that energy into a huge storage bank such as a 50 kV transformer, and then he's realized that 50 kV transformer is a big, big place to dump energy, because energy always wants to go to the lesser charged. The higher charge wants to travel to where the lesser charge is, because it's trying to balance everything out. And so you're able to fuel that 50 kV transformer And then from that 58 kV transformer, you can drop that energy back down into a smaller transformer with a smaller container to hold that energy. And then you can fill that smaller one up. And as long as you had some amount of energy in the big transformer, then the little one would always remain full, and you'd be able to pull a constant load off of it because you couldn't drain the energy fast enough because the big tank was never empty. So every time you used power off the little one, it would constantly keep the little one full from the big one. And so he was able to take a 2,500 watt generator and run that into the 50 kV transformer, down into the 25 kV transformer, and then run not one, but three 1,500 watt space heaters, plus a reciprocating saw. And if you did the math and the calculations, you'd realize that that generator wasn't capable of producing enough energy to run all these at the same time. That generator should have been bogging down. Excuse me while I get a drink of coffee. So anyway, all these things played into what the designs that I was talking about. And even when you get down to the point about talking about leverage, how can you add to a system to give it the capability to quite literally overcome a necessary force that would be turning a generator head? And so that got me looking into flywheels. You know, your average internal combustion engine has a flywheel on it, and that flywheel is weighted. And it's weighted for a purpose, because without that flywheel and that weight, that extra centrifugal force that is that thing heavy thing gets up to spinning, it wouldn't have enough compression, enough pressure to be able to overcome the compression that is necessary to run that internal combustion engine. So you have to have that flywheel to give that extra little boost on there. And so that, added with what all I've just explained about electricity, would say that if you wanted you wanted to be able to overcome resistance as far as the cogging effect or the lens effect from pulling energy off of a generator head, that you could employ the physics of a flywheel in order to add that extra energy that from once you got this thing up to spinning, the centrifugal force would keep that thing going around, and it would make it pass that cogging effect that was slowing you down to begin with. So, all these things in conjunction with each other have the capability of quite literally building the perfect machine. Now, you need to be really efficient. You need to be precision. You need precision bearings, because the less wobble you got in it, obviously, the less resistance that you're going to have, and the less that you're going to be tearing things up. So, as I'm studying all these things and I'm putting all these pieces on the table to actually put together the concept of what I'm trying to share with people, I looked in every single direction. I looked at every single device that everybody out there was talking about, and what it was that they were claiming, and what it was that they hoped to gain, and all that kind of stuff. And even get into the whole deal about the differences in terminologies and physics, and why they always say that energy's not free, or, you know, you can't do this because, or whatever. There's always a solution. There's no, you can't do this because. It's you can't do it if you ain't going to be willing to try to re-engineer old designs. So a lot of these old generators, just by adding a heavier flywheel and getting that thing up to speed, would have made that thing more efficient, because once you get this thing in motion, they say energy, objects that are at rest tend to stay at rest, and objects that are in motion tend to stay in motion. So you get this flywheel up to spinning, and it's got to meet a whole lot of resistance before it will begin to slow down. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever been out to a playground and have seen one of them old metal style merry-go-rounds. Once you get those things up to spinning, You know, it doesn't take a whole lot to get them going, but once you do get them going and you get them up to spinning, you can't just reach over there and grab that thing and stop it. The centrifugal force and the inertia that's built up, it's spinning that thing around in circles, it'll drag you around while you're trying to stop it. It takes a lot of force to stop this. And so adding all these things in together, the how energy travels, how leverage works, gear ratios, you know, to speed up or slow down something, the differences in how to generate frequencies, like the difference between a high frequency Tesla coil and a 50 or 60 hertz transformer that you're, you know, getting your power off of the main power grid. Those are two, they're the same energy, just moving faster. It's as simple as that. And so we need to be able to put a device together that would actually give people electricity, but also be efficient enough that they could afford to run. You know, anybody can go out and buy a gas generator. Modern day gas generator or even a diesel generator, you know, you can even run them off a biofuel. There's a lot better and more efficient fuels that you can run if you understand and look into all that as well. But so to build the perfect device isn't as simple as just taking a battery and pulsing some transistors in order to be able to pulse the primary and then pulse the secondary if you don't understand what's going to occur when you start to draw that energy off. And so the key to all of this right here is once you have an understanding of how energy is actually traveling and you know, you know, you're not going to try to violate the lens effect, but you know exactly what's going to cause that lens effect to occur, and where do you want that load to be put on? Do you want it to be put on the battery, or do you want it to be put on the next storage space in line? Do you want it to be put on the generator head that's actually charging your storage space, or do you want to take and use the battery to produce a pulse, whether it be from a transistor or a rotary spark gap like I was talking about, or a rotary switch that would take the energy from that battery and pulse it out in time to produce whatever frequency range you wanted, and then take that energy from that and charge a secondary source that you're going to change that energy from something completely different than what it was starting off with, and then take that energy and then change it into something else that could bring it back into usable current that you want. That's where the plasma came in. Because if you go back and look in time, the mercury arc rectifier, which I actually Google it up again and get a picture link of it. Let's see. I'll get even though I don't like Wikipedia, I will get a Wikipedia article, because even though Wikipedia's got a bias and you really can't trust a lot of what they say, because they're... You'll understand if you just go look in it. Go try to write an article on Wikipedia and see how much trouble you get. How many people will come out there to trash your article. Try to tell you, especially if you try to say energy's free, then that's a no-no. If you try to claim perpetual motion, then that's a no-no. You don't do that. Because they are like so stuck in the mainstream that... you're not going to have any outside-the-box thinkers on Wikipedia. So Wikipedia, where it might be good for, you know, some things, as far as just general information, I wouldn't trust them on anything else out there. If they tell you energy ain't free, then you know dang good and well they're full of it. Because energy is free, we're surrounded by it. And I've even heard people out there saying, oh, well, you know, those people that say energy's free because we're floating in the sea of it, they don't understand nothing, blah, blah. Well, yeah, I do understand it. I understand it to the extent that all we're doing is throwing nature off balance and get work done. And just because the standard model does it inefficiently doesn't mean there isn't a better way. Well, the mercury arc rectifier is proof positive that there is a better way. If you look at this Mercury arc rectifier, it's pretty doggone amazing. You know, it's basically the world's first plasma reactor that I know of. I mean, there might be other ones out there. And with the Mercury arc rectifier scanning into the future, then you see the plasma globe. The plasma globe's a nifty toy. It also could be a good learning tool if you understand what's going on inside there. You're taking a high voltage, high frequency, and you turn it into plasma. What is plasma? All right? Hold on a second. So what is plasma? Well, depending on your definition, basically it's, a little more high tech than the way that I normally explain it. Well, the way that I explain it is basically it's energizing this gas in there. It's releasing electrons in there. They're slamming around. They're banging into each other. They're producing friction, which in turn is producing heat. And it is making a pressurized container of all these nifty gases and colors and whatever. Anyway, the Mercury arc rectifier had a small pull of mercury, a little pull of mercury down the bottom. They had to figure out a way to turn high voltage AC from Tesla's system into rectified DC for Edison's system, because there were elevator motors in place at the time, back before the AC current won out. DC current, there was actual infrastructure there. And so what ended up happening was you pump this high voltage AC in there, it would pressurize this container and send out the other side rectified DC current, high voltage DC current. So you just took the energy, one form of energy, changed it into a completely different form of energy, and pressurized a container that now the electrons couldn't flow back in the opposite direction. They had to go forward. They had to go to the lesser charge. They had to go out the other side, and now you got DC rectified current. So, if you go look at this this doggone plasma reactor, there are actually, the Mercury arc rectifier, there are actually smaller versions of this. And one of the first Mercury arc bulbs built by Cooper Hewitt, that's... That's one that I'd like to get a hold of. If I ever find one, I'm going to get a hold of that. See, when you put that high voltage AC into that mercury is a liquid metal. And basically, you just produced a dead short. And the dead short is now going to generate a massive amount of heat, depending on how much current you got flowing through this. Will determine on how fast it actually does it, but nonetheless it will take that mercury and vaporize it into a gas. The high voltage AC continues to come in. Now everything in there is releasing its electrons and grabbing and pushing and slamming into each other, and you get plasma inside this tube right here, and it produces visible light. And on the outside over there, you got your output, and so you end up with DC rectified current. It's pretty amazing. And if you go on Wikipedia to the article, I just posted into the chat room. I'll post it in, make sure, I got it in every one of them. Go in there and take a peek at that link right there. Just look over the deal. And I guess you'll get an understanding of what it is that I'm saying about why it is that I got into plasma technology. Because if you can change the energy to a completely different form, and you got the pressure flowing in one direction, and the pressure's building up in this one direction, the way that science explains it is that the positive, a higher pressure, is going to flow towards the lower pressure. And since you're over there trying to draw a load off of the thing, that's going to be the lower pressure, because it's needing energy to get the work done. I hope that makes sense to you. But there are other versions of this deal. So there's a cutaway model of an early high voltage steel tank rectifier rated at 50 kV at 30 amps. I'd like to get a hold of one of those too. And the steel tank mercury arc rectifier, you can't see inside of it, but it's pretty much doing the same thing. It's rated at 560 volts at a 1,330 amps, and it's produced by Siemens. See, there's a lot there's a lot of this technology that they're already using out there, and it's amazing. But the average Joe doesn't have any kind of clue about, you know, a lot of these older technology. It's been around for a long time. Let me see when the actual date of the mercury arc rectifier was, according to Wikipedia. Invented in 1902. Actually, I think it was around a lot before that, but that's probably when they got their patent on it. Anyway, early 1900s, I keep saying the late 1800s because it was around before that. There were people actually testing way before that. There were basically fluorescent bulbs and stuff. That was a plasma reactor as well, but they just didn't have anodes and cathodes in them at the time. So, either way, that's the deal. Go look at that. So, anyway, moving right along here. Basically, I talked about the flywheel, and this needs to be so easy that anyone can do it. If you're going to make a generating system or a secondary device that would be more plausible to take the energy that you already have available, store it, and make it to where it allows that generator to not have to work hard. We're basically at idle speed, pushing out whatever it's capable, its maximum amount. You can move that energy to another form of energy so that that main generator never has to work past its maximum potential, its maximum output. So you're always going to get maximum output out of this generator. So you're not going to get out more than you put in, but what you are going to get is every bit of what you got, you can possibly get out of this generator, moved over to a different form of energy, and then transferred from that into back into usable current through a storage system. So, basically, a device like that, people could buy this thing or build it themselves, that they could then in turn get better efficiencies out of existing engines, until the point when people finally understand that you could re-engineer an engine to run so much more efficiency, and the higher efficiency rate that people can get, the better. But so, basically, what I've just explained to you is we can move step by step through this entire process that maybe you're not going to get right directly off the power grid, but the energy that you are going to be using, that you're going to be using it so efficiently that you're going to be able to use more of it for less money, less input, and so on and so forth. Instead of these energy hogs like we got them set up right now, where everything that we use right now wastes energy. Every electric motor that you got is engineered poorly. These magnetic fields, they only have to be able to interact with each other. They don't have to expand past each other or anything like that. You don't have to have a massive amount of power to get two magnets to repel each other. Once you got the understanding about magnetic fields that opposites attracts and positive will repel each other, and all you got to do is get these two magnets in to general proximity of each other, and they will react according to whatever the polarity is at any given time. You don't have to try to force these things in there. Now, if you look at how generators are built, in order to get a stronger pulse into the coils from magnets being spun around, then you want to press them in there so you've got a really short gap so that you've got all that magnetic flux pressure, real close into there so that you're getting the maximum amount of pressure out of it. But in the process of that, there's a give and take, because the closer you got in there, now that magnet's wanting to connect to that metal. It's wanting to attract, because that metal can be magnetized. And so while it's that close, it's wanting to drag. It's wanting to grab it. Well, that is causing you drag on there, and that's why whenever you grab a hold of a permanent magnet motor and you start to turn the shaft on there, you can feel that little cogging effect in there. And that's what people have been trying to overcome, is that little cogging effect as these magnets are trying to grab a hold of that metal. They want them close enough so that it's a strong magnetic flux, so you're getting the maximum amount of magnetic flux and the strongest field going past those coils of wire. But in the process, it's going to slow the thing down. It's going to form resistance. Now, you can back that magnet away from that deal just enough so that the flux lines are still crossing it, but it reduces that cogging effect so extremely that you can spin this thing faster. And you can spin it longer because it's not having to fight near as hard. So even in the process of engineering these things, which what I just explained there is already figured out, because if you actually look inside of a hard drive motor and you see how weak that magnet is inside that hard drive motor and how it's actually designed, when you spin these things up to really super high RPMs, you'd be amazed at the voltage that you can get out of a tiny bit of copper wire that's inside those motors. The brushless DC motors, and when you're spinning these, the pulse DC motors, when you're spinning them around backwards, you turn it into a generator and it does the same thing. But the key that I was trying to get to is that the field is so weak, but it's strong enough to make that change in that coil to produce high voltage. And once you understand all that, you can make a high voltage generator ridiculously simple. Yeah, the slower you move it, the more current you can get out of the maximum that's available, that the potential power that's available in it. But the faster you spin that, the higher the frequency range, the faster everything happens, the higher the voltage goes, and that it's no different than what Tesla was doing with the knife switch. You're speeding it up and you're slowing it down. So you can basically real super simple generate high voltage. It's really ridiculously easy to generate high voltage. Getting the massive amount of current that you need to run the inefficient junk that we've got, that's the trick. But once you understand about storage and basically moving energy from point A to point B, if you got, let's say, an 800 microfarad capacitor, I've said this many times, that fully charged 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand. That's how much stored energy potential is in there. Imagine if you could keep that 800 microfarad capacitor fully charged continuously. If you already got it under a load, you can use it as a battery. You can use it as a temporary storage place. And because of the way that it works, you're not allowing electron flow to go through that capacitor back into that generator that you're using to charge it with. And if you're using a high voltage spark gap type system to charge that capacitor, there's no physical way for the electrons to flow back in the other direction, because the high voltage arc coming across there is going in one direction, and it has too much pressure for the electrons to be able to overcome to come back the other direction. Now, if there's no way that that energy can escape that capacitor, you're not taking that energy away from that capacitor fast enough, and that capacitor can overcharge itself, then it could build up enough pressure, depending on how wide that spark gap was, to quite literally leap back in the other direction. Because it's going to be the highest charge moving to the lowest charge at any given time. And so you got a massive amount of high voltage, high frequency coming from your generator. As long as that capacitor can never reach the potential to overcome the amount of energy that's being forced out of that generator, then it's always going to continue to go into the direction of least resistance, which is into the direction of the lesser charge in the other direction. So there you go. And so, whether it be a Van de Graaff generator, a Lord Kelvin generator, a Wimshurst generator, or any type of static generator you can think about, even an old Lord Huxley device, whether it be any just direct DC source, a pulse DC source, high voltage AC, nonetheless, all these things would apply to moving that energy forward and away from the generator system. And you could actually build a windmill utilizing any of the Wimshurst, Van de Graaff, any of these. You could actually build a generator, wind turbine, to spin this thing up. Now, what's the advantage of that? The advantage is you can produce a high voltage, high frequency without the resistance of a generator head that you're actually drawing the energy directly from. So instead of me having a generator head built into the top of the deal connected to a rotor that is being blown by the wind and have to overcome, you have to have enough wind force to be able to overcome the resistance of that generator that is connected to my rectifier that goes down and charge my batteries, I don't have to overcome all that anymore. I just got a freewheeling. Is that the word I need? Freewheeling. Yeah, freewheeling spinning rotor that is spinning around picking up a static charge, and as the static charge builds up, it then in turn leaps across the gap, and that pressure goes down and absorbs into my storage bank, and I have power. So even at really low winds, as long as that wind was strong enough to turn that blade, then that blade would continuously turn. And as long as that blade was spinning around, producing the friction or rubbing effect of whatever two materials you put in it, it's going to build up a static charge while these two exchange electrons, not just from each other, but from the atmosphere that it's going through. And that electron flow would go down, charge up your capacitor, and then from that capacitor bleed off into your battery bank, and now you've got actual power to deal with. So there's all kinds of different ways that I just explained on how we can move the same type of energy. All electricity, whether it be static electricity, AC, or DC current, all of it is the same exact energy. It's nothing more than electrons flowing from one higher or positive or negative or lower potential, whatever. That's all it is. Is electron exchange, according to the standard model of what they explain as electricity being. And so, a static electricity generator and an AC generator and a DC generator are all pushing the same type of energy. They're just pushing it in a different state. When you take that energy off your generator, you move it into the plasma state, it's still the same exact energy. And depending on how you actually use this energy, you have absolutely no losses at this point, unless that you don't take whatever is radiating from it and add it to your equation, or any heat generated from it and add it to your equation. If you took the average internal combustion engine and you understood every single thing that was going on with it, everything from vibration, everything from the temperature of the cylinders and the fuel being burned and the way it's being burned and all these different things going on, even the friction of the atmosphere itself rolling around this thing. If you understood all the physics of how energy and heat has been transferred from point A to point B and why it is that you need a radiator, or, you know, why it is that you need certain types of material here and there, you know, like something as simple as the rubber hose. Why would you need a rubber hose connected to a metal engine and a metal, radiator? Well, the simple of the fact is that, you got different materials, like you're using copper or brass or even plastic to some parts of the modern radiators, or aluminum as the medium where you're transferring this water that is going to exchange that heat out. But these are lighter weight materials, and if you put an iron radiator in there, it wouldn't last very long because it would oxidize and rust and leak real quick, whereas these other ones are rust resistant. So you know why you got those there. The rubber hose in the middle is so that you can add flexibility, so when you're bouncing up and down the road, it's not ripping the neck of the radiator off and causing it to leak there because of the vibrations or the torque of the engine and the motor mounts and all that kind of stuff. So now you're understanding how this energy, and you're understanding the purposes of different materials, of why it is that we put this here in order to, while this we're trying to extract the energy that we want from the gasoline or the diesel that we're using to run the engine, that we're using to transfer all that down to the through the drivetrain and finally get it to the tires and to the ground and get us on down the road. Everything that's going on in that entire process, there are side effects, there are byproducts, and every bit of what would be classified as wasted energy could be recaptured, or even guided. That energy could be guided to where you want it to go. The heat of the engine itself, just by changing the material of what this engine is made of, and by putting materials where you need the heat to be able to withstand the heat, and, you know, systems of insulation in between that and the material that your engine's actually made from, you could reduce the amount of heat that was actually being wasted by the energy, by the energy being used. So you'd have a gasoline engine that wouldn't be radiating all this heat out, which would take away from what you would actually need to do to keep that engine cool. If the engine only got lukewarm, then there wouldn't be no need for the fan to be kicking on all the time, and the water circulating through there is used to transfer the heat energy away from that engine would go into the radiator, and the radiator wouldn't ever get really hot, so you wouldn't have to worry about the fan ever kicking on. And when that fan doesn't kick on, that means the lens effect won't occur, and it won't cause your generator or your alternator to bog down at that point. So you just made your engine more efficient just by re-engineering that engine to absorb vibration, to not radiate heat from the pistons out to the metal block of the engine. And so there you don't have this constant buildup of heat energy that you've got to figure out a way to get rid of, either via cooling fins or a water jacket that's actually transferring that heat away from it. And if you can't transfer that heat away fast enough, then your engine will reach its thermal breakdown at its weakest point, and the engine will fail. And so once you understand all these little things about how this energy is actually traveling, now you have the knowledge in your head how to re-engineer this engine to be, it's incredibly efficient. If I only need my temperature, the heat where I need to work done as far as where I'm burning my fuel to be in the cylinder, then why would I want to allow that energy to radiate out into the engine itself, or even into the wiring? Because when I do that, that means I got to add another system to compensate for all the losses that I've got going on. And so if I engineer this machine to push the energy only in the direction that I want it to go, I make it incredibly efficient. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about water, plumbing, or electricity, and electronics, or, you know, gasoline engines, or hydraulics, or whatever. It doesn't matter which one of these systems. All of these physics apply in the same exact manner. If you don't have a way to get rid of the, what would have been classified as the waste energy, because you're actually having to push more through this system in order to get the result that you want, then it causes the resistance, causes the heat, and causes it to fail. And even in some incidents, when you're trying to send energy one way, the system that you're wanting to receive the energy can't receive it fast enough, and so you get a backup of energy going back into the system and causing resistance of the electron flow, and it's all energy building up in the system, and it can't get down the road fast enough, and so it causes heat. When you figure this out, and you know that you only need this amount, you only need this process to be able to interact with that process, only in general proximity of each other. These two magnetic fields have to come in general proximity of each other. And because one is positive and one negative, we know that it will attract it. And because one is positive and the other is positive, we know that it will repel it. We figured this out. Two magnets, you know. Opposite polarities attract, positive polarities repel. We figured this out. It ain't no different than an electromagnetic field as well. You take two electromagnets, you face them at each other, you put one in one direction, you put one in the other direction, and now you're pushing out two positive or even two negative fields or whatever. These are going to want to repel each other. They're not going to want to be together. And then you want it to track to the next one, so maybe you've got the next pulse comes in the opposite direction, and so now you've got the one wanting to attract to it, and when it gets right up above there, you switch the polarity real fast, and now it wants to repel it again. So you got a motor that keeps changing from the same coils, keeps flip-flopping back and changing that polarity. Some of which, you'll see if you look in these rotors, they'll have little slots in there. Those will change from north to south fields or whatever, make little breaks in the system so that this magnetic field will keep changing. There's all different types of ways in order to manipulate the energy that we're talking about. And that's all we're doing. We're changing it, we're changing its direction, we're speeding it up, we're slowing it down, but nonetheless, every single bit of it is the same type of energy. And all we're doing, in the simplest sense possible to explain, is throwing nature off balance. Nature tries to slap it back into balance, and in the process, there's a force where we get work done. It's that simple. So we know how to do this with transistors. We know how to do it with relays and rotary switches. We know how to do it with the mechanical devices. There's so many different ways to generate a pulse and to change polarity. And so we got a full understanding of how to produce a magnetic field. We got a full understanding of how to use a permanently magnetized item such as a magnet, and how to use wires that are not able to be magnetized but able to be affected by a magnetic field such as copper, because it's conductive, and the way that copper is designed with 29 electrons, the last electron being loosely coupled to the atom, and so it's easy to kind of move it around a bit, you know, because it's just dangling there or whatever. So copper is a really good conductive. But there are other ones that are non-magnetic that you can actually transfer electron flow through, such as aluminum wire. A lot of industries out there went to aluminum instead of copper to make electrical wire. But even that change over there caused another problem where you had to add some sort of conductive and dielectric grease to so that you know, this expansion and contraction in the different temperatures of this stuff wouldn't cause arcs, which would in turn cause a fire. So there's all kinds of different factors. But basically, how I started to study all of this stuff right here, and where I come to now, is that I got an understanding of how energy travels, and I got an understanding of the physics of everything that's going on mechanically in just about every type of system under the sun. You know what causes heat. You know what reaction you're going to get from this to that. And taking all these pieces of the puzzle, I'm telling you that it is possible to engineer the perfect machines. That's what I'm trying to show everybody with my Mad Science YouTube channel and everything. I put a lot of crazy stuff on my Mad Science YouTube channel for a reason. I want people to open their mind and think about possibilities. I'll pose a question. I'll put a question mark on there. Most people don't even read the description of the video. Most people don't even read the description of the video. They'll read the title and they'll go watch a portion of the video and instantaneously go into that's fake or debunking or whatever, you know, and mock and ridicule when they completely and utterly either misunderstood the description, misunderstood the title, didn't even watch the video through the entirety of it, and didn't even take their mind and think, is anything possible? If they would have took the time to think about it, and then put a common sense question or comment down in the section, they would have got a reaction where I would have opened a dialogue with them. But in the process of trying to show them things that would open their mind to possibilities, I opened myself up for ridicule from people who had absolutely no understanding about what it is that I was trying to do there. And you'd be surprised at the things that people will call you when they think they're smarter than you. They'll call you all kinds of things, every name in the book, and then some. They'll even make them up if they have to. But instead of opening the dialogue saying, well, yeah, I think it's possible, and this is how I think it's possible, and then I come in there and say, yeah, you know, I kind of agree with that, you know, or maybe if you added this over here. The YouTube channel was a search for the dream team. That's what it was. The entire Shaziz Radio YouTube channel, the Shaziz Mad Science YouTube channel, was a search for the dream team. It was a search for like-minded individuals who thought about possibilities and wanted to see how far that we could actually take them. Studying the laws of physics and everything about electricity and how it travels to see what and how far we could go, to boldly go where no man has gone before. What I got in return? Oh boy. Never did get the dream team. I met a lot of good people, made some friends, but nobody who was really seriously ready to dedicate to building things and making things happen. So, I went from there to doing radio shows. Trying to add some more videos in there. Hoping that one of those videos, one of them crazy videos, or even one of the regular common sense videos, would spark some thought and inspire people to want to be a part of the dream team. See, I say, because I've done the research, Stan Myers was driving around in a dune buggy back in the 70s. Back during the whole Arab oil embargo crisis or whatever. Nonetheless, he was driving around in a car using water for fuel. And because I did all that research into how he was doing things or whatever, and had understanding of Tesla technology, things that he used from different people that researched out there, it made my mechanical mind inspired enough to think. And so that's why I come and said that it is possible to quite literally design, engineer an engine that will run on pure distilled water. Because if you know the physics and you understand the whole entire concept of what I'm trying to say, you take the energy that you want and you can get a result by taking this energy that you're using and changing it to the energy that you want to get the result that you want. If I got a 12-volt battery and I want to separate the water molecule, I got some choices. If I try to use electrolysis, then water in itself isn't conductive. Water with impurities in it is conductive. And so in order to use the electrolysis process the way that it is set to separate the hydrogen and oxygen, that means I have to add something to make that water more conductive, such as salt or, you know, whatever. Now, the electrolysis process can cause it to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. But this process has a takeaway. First, you're drawing too much amperage from the battery because of the resistance between those two plates and the electrical conductivity of the water now. Now you basically got a dead short going on there. And unless you had a massive, and I mean a massive tank with lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of plates so that you could actually get that energy to be able to travel slower through that entirety of that system, then you're not going to beat the whole resistance factor of it. What you end up with is basically a short, which causes the water to get hot. It causes the plates to get hot. And the corrosive effect causes crud to build up in the bottom of your electrolysis, your fuel cell, your hydrogen cell. A simple hydrogen cell is two plates closely together, not touching, but closely together, close enough so that whatever conductive water you have in between there will be able to allow, you know, the energy to flow through there like a battery. If you go back in time and you look at the old batteries, the old lead acid batteries, they had a warning label on there, an explosion warning label. When you run your headlights, you were doing the electrolysis process. And as you're running that, your battery would produce hydrogen. It would off-gas hydrogen and had to have a vent in the top of the battery. Well, if you got a spark across there or that vent was plugged up, you could cause the battery to swell and even burst, or you could cause an implosion from the hydrogen if you got it next to an arc or whatever. So the old style batteries used to have to be vented. And you would notice that if you went over and touched that old style battery, it would get hotter. And it would get hotter than your modern battery would, because of the way that it was designed. And they've since made changes to the battery that, you know, kind of reduce that effect. But nonetheless, that's the basics of electrolysis. Is you got two plates, an electrolyte in between or something to make that water conductive. And when you charge that battery, you got one side charged at more pressure than the other side, and it wants to balance out, go from negative to positive or positive to negative, whichever way you believe it's going. Nonetheless, that flow of energy going through those plates and through that electrolysis causes, once you put those terminals under a load, will cause the electrolysis, which will separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and eventually you'll have to refill your battery with some water, distilled water, and battery acid mixture. excuse me, so that you don't get no crud built up in that battery and cause it to fail early. That's the whole deal. So where are we at? Efficiency on how we generate lots of power. So the key of all this right here is that in order to get somebody an off-grid style system, a free energy device, so to speak, which basically you might as well just say efficiency device, because if you say free energy, you get all the knuckleheads come rolling up out of there that think they're so intelligent they don't have a decent conversation. They just think they're smart because they can quote like a mockingbird the book and the physics. They're not going to teach me anything about physics that I don't already understand. But nonetheless, in order to get things so that people can be able to run things affordably, we need to be able to know how to move energy from one place to the next to get the work done that we want. We want heating, we got air conditioning, we want TV and computers and lighting and all this kind of stuff. We want freezers for our food and, you know, whatever. Fans, air conditioners, heating and cooling, and all the luxuries. So the modern day system is getting slightly more efficient because they're able to shrink things down and change, whereas at one point you would have had to have a big giant transformer in order to go look at the difference between the old style train transformers that were step-down transformers that would run your little toy trains, and the modern-day cell phone charger. It doesn't take much to charge that cell phone. It's a little bitty kind of deal. And a lot of different things nowadays don't take that much. So they are, to some extent, getting more efficient. And those kind of devices, if people was to want to reduce their electric bill, would be beneficial. As long as they understood that when they're not using it, to unplug it, because even when they plug it in, or when they leave it plugged in, they will basically be using the energy even when they're not using it. So, if you want to reduce your electric bill, it could be simple as taking unplugging things. And a lot of the appliances that we do use on a continuous basis, we got a lead plugged in, like let's say your digital alarm clock. If you ever look inside a digital alarm clock that requires a wall outlet, you'll note that it's got a transformer in there that's stepping that energy down from 120 volts or 220, would depend on wherever you're at, down to quite literally, before it's all said and done, 9 volts AC or 9 volts DC, depending on which clock you got. And so you needed 120 to 220 volts for what reason? Because it only required 9 volts AC or 9 volts DC in order to run this circuit, which it all turns out to be when it's all said and done. If you're using digital, like LED style numbers, it's all down to DC anyway. 9 volts DC is what it basically comes down to, because if you got an AC current, it's running a rectifier that's changing it to DC. And so if you go down to the lowest voltage of the actual work being done and you realize that this could have been run off of a 9-volt battery, the equivalence of a 9-volt battery, and you designed your home to be a smart system to where it only pulled power, you had one transformer in your house and it had multiple lines running out for multiple different voltages, and you only used what was necessary, and the only transformer you had in the entire house was one that would run the circuitry necessary to run your TV, your light bill would be so incredibly less than what it is now, because now you understand how that energy is traveling. And so you're using it to the best of your ability, the best of efficiency. So, efficiency on how we generate lots of power could come down to as simple as this. If we understand how to pull the power away from the system to use it the way that we want to use it, so that it's not affecting the system that we're pulling the power from, then that's one key. But now that we got that efficiency, we take the money that we save from the efficiency of pulling the power into the efficiency of generating the power. We take that money that we saved every month from the way that we're using our power and invest it into engineering a system that's going to push the power to begin with more efficiently. So if we designed an engine that would run on pure distilled water, just because you understood of how electricity travels and all the physics of water, you know, they say a liquid can't be compressed. Okay, we get that. But a gas can be compressed. And anytime you compress a gas, it generates heat. And so there's another portion of the deal. You can actually take and you can heat this water and get the molecules inside there moving around, loosening it up, and then you can heat it yet even more and get them moving even faster. Now the water is getting hot, and then you can move it yet even more and cause these water molecules to begin to vaporize into a gas. And now you have pressure building up, and then you can take that gas and then you can in turn break it down even more, and then using sonic vaporization technology, break it down yet even more right before you inject it into a cylinder, a 300 degree cylinder. And as soon as that hits that cylinder, it's already primed and ready to go. The temperature difference isn't enough to cause thermal expansion or contraction, because it's already hot as you know what right before it goes into a cylinder that's a little bit hotter. And so that right there in turn will cause that water molecule to expand so rapidly that you superheated the steam of causing 1600 times expansion rate that pushes that piston down. And then on the upstroke will quite literally crack the hydrogen and oxygen molecule in the process, releasing an electric charge, which when you want to start a fire, you need three things. You need an ignition source, you need a fuel source, and you need oxygen, all of which is involved in that scenario right there. Using everything from air conditioner to technology to heating and cooling, whichever, HVAC, to induction heating, to compressor technology, to compression ignition, to internal combustion engine, diesel atomizer technology, into sonic vaporizer technology, all these different things that I mentioned, all our technologies available that you can take the water from its liquid state, heat that water up, bring it around to a state of matter that by the time it gets into ready to be injected into that system, it's already primed and ready to go and ready to crack on demand with the pressure, the temperature, and the electrical charge involved in it, and you got a fuel. Somebody had to understand of gasoline or petrol, whichever term you use, in order to be able to use it as fuel. Somebody had to understand the byproducts of crude oil being one of them being kerosene that they use in lamps, in order to be able to use that as fuel for lamps. Somebody had to understand the crude oil to begin with. What can we do with this? What can we do with the gases that come off of it? What can we do when we refine it? So you can take from crude oil and make diesel fuel. You can make gasoline. You can make kerosene. You can make plastics and rubber and all kinds of petroleum products from a black crud that's pulled up out of the ground. And we can even produce the black crud. If you understand the physics of how the black crud was even made, the crude oil that everybody's going out there fighting wars over, And this is supposedly a natural resource, and the dollar is no longer backed by gold. It's called a petrol dollar. So we're using a oil-based economy, essentially, with the monopoly money to play games with the world. If you understand science, and you understand physics, and you understand nature, then you understand exactly how and why it is that we're all in the jam that we're in right now. Why it is it cost you so much to put fuel in your vehicle? Why it is it cost you so much to get anything? I understand buying a product. You can buy a TV that you don't know how to build yourself. I can get that. But to buy something that nature's already provided, such as a glass of water, I don't understand that at all. Because science will teach you how to take filthy water and make fresh drinking water. Science will teach you how to take that same liquid, and knowing that it's a liquid and understanding the physics, use that as hydraulic fluid. And understanding the differences of how water, and because water has oxygen in there, will cause things to corrode or oxidize, then you could understand how to quite literally design hydraulic cylinders that would not oxidize or corrode nearly at the rate that anything else would. You could also understand that you could use those hydraulics, water as a hydraulic fluid, to literally lift a massive amount of weight if you understand how to pump the water through the cylinders. Differences between a positive displacement pump or whatever, something that when you push the water in one side, it can't go back the other direction. It has to go in, and so it forces pressure into it. And then you turn around and understand that how you could spin that thing, and you know that once it reaches its force in there, you've got to have some leverage in order to be able to continue to turn that. So then enters gear ratios and leverage. Folks, I might be giving you too much information all in one shot. But what my point is, we have every single answer to every single question necessary to build the perfect machines. And we're never going to get it without a dream team. We're never going to get it through industry. By the time it does make it out onto the market, it's going to be in their control, under their regulations, and that technology will be copyrighted in their name and patented in their name, no matter who pays for it, which 99.9% of the time is you. A lot of the industries out there are funded by government plans, supplemented, because, you know, we got to keep the economy going. We got to keep the industries alive so everybody have jobs, so that you can buy more oil from the people that want to use that oil as a power structure. Tesla tried to give people free energy because he realized that there wouldn't be no use for wars if people weren't fighting over resources. Those folks that think that we're ever going to run out of any resource on this planet obviously did not pay attention in science class. Nature recycles everything. Nature wastes nothing. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing that man has ever built that nature cannot deteriorate and recycle. Nothing. Even when we take a material that's highly radioactive and we refine it and we make a ceramic rod that's super highly radioactive because we crammed all this energy into one little compact deal, nature will still break it down. Nature will use the physics and all the tricks of the trade to break that back down. And when you put too much pressure in anything, when you put too much energy in anything, and it's off balance, nature is going to try to move this back to balance as rapidly as possible, and if you get in the way, you get hurt. And if you understand that, and you understand how nature is going to try to move this back as fast as possible, now you understand that in between that energy released from those radioactive rods to the nature's balance, you're getting work done. The so-called depleted uranium rods that are still hot, not safe for humans according to what they explain, are still potential energy. They're batteries right there. You get more energy right there than you can possibly imagine, and you could use these things down until they were completely at zero, just like any battery. That's just one example. And yet they say that there's no such thing as free energy. Those things are still radioactive. Man put them together, and there's no such thing as free energy. Man took something that nature already provided, spun it up in a centrifuge, took all the hottest parts out, put them into a ceramic material, then used it for a nuclear power plant to boil water. Once it got to the point where it was not efficient to boil the water, you only use like 2% of the energy from that highly refined radioactive rod, and when it won't boil the water fast enough or efficiently enough, then it's considered depleted, and so they put it into a cooling pool for 10 years to let it cool down. And in that 10 years, that's energy just being transferred out, just going to waste. That's it. But NASA figured out they could take a piece of this material, they could put it into and use it for thermoelectrics, and they can send a probe all the way to Pluto, is what they said. So far away that you look back at the sun, it's a little tiny speck in the sky, and a solar panel would barely be able to pick up any energy from the sun. But by the time they get there, they say that they were producing over 200 watts of power, enough to take a picture, shine a light on this rock out here, take a picture, and send it all the way back through the deepness, darkness of space, and you know, you got a picture of what they said is Pluto. If indeed what they said is true, and that's what they did, and that's some amazing technology, but nonetheless, if thermoelectrics will work that well after being in space for 9 years, then each one of those rods is a thermoelectric generator energy potential. So, all you have to have in order to get things done is an understanding of energy. You're floating in the sea of it. So, if you're standing in a big ocean full of salt water, and you're thirsty as all get out, and you're thinking, well, the last guy that drank this water didn't fare so well, so I know I can't drink this. I'm going to die of thirst standing here. But because science figured out about desalinization, and you're standing in the ocean and you understand desalinization, you could take and use a few tricks of how to desalinate that water and get some water to drink. But if you didn't understand it to begin with, then you're going to stand there and die of thirst while standing up to your neck in water. It's crazy. This is why I call it mad science. Because it's all crazy. People will go to war over oil. It's proven. People will go to war over diamonds and gold and silver and land. It's crazy. I just don't understand the mindset of the greedy people of the world, past the extent of the fact that they're selfish. But if people want to fix this world, If people are tired of the greedy people out there monopolizing on the slave labors of 98% of the planet, and believe me, if you're going to work, even though you can justify it because you need things and you're trying to provide for your family, which is honorable, you're still a slave to the system because you are still paying way more for energy than you need to pay for. And in the process of making a product or even buying a product, you're still supporting the system, the same system that is out there doing terrible things to people. And even the people. There are certain people who I don't understand. Are basically, there's a darkness in them that they don't have any kind of concern for anybody else, and they will abuse people. They'll do terrible things to one another. If we were set down here for a purpose and it was to learn how to work together, the human being is amazing and has amazing power and potential. But all the gifts that we've been given are being squandered. They're being fought over. I understand energy. I understand the mechanics of how this world works. But I can't for the life of me understand the mechanics of how the human mind can justify the things that humans do to each other. If you want to make the perfect world, we can make the perfect world. But it cannot be done without the dream team. I'm just one piece of the puzzle, and I can stand out there and shine as bright as all get out, and I can keep on shining and shining, but you will never ever get the big picture until you realize that without you, the next piece of puzzle in line, the picture can't be completed. And so the biggest lesson that we've got to learn is how that we can all come together to complete that big picture. You know, they say that all men are created equal. And everybody talks about freedom, and they talk about peace, hope, and love. But they're not realizing where their true power is. The true power and the true potential, what the human's actually capable of. You can take your voice and you can throw a pitch out there, and you can hold up a crystal glass in front of you, and you can raise your voice to the pitch of what the resonant frequency of that glass is. And you can cause that glass to fracture. It will find that vocal, that tone that's going out, will find the weakest part of that glass, because every single glass has a flaw in it because it was made by man. If it was a glass of perfection, it would take you longer, but you could still, with your voice, hold that pitch and vibrate that glass until you shattered it. Using physics and science and understanding of nature, you were just able to use your voice to shatter a glass. Using your voice to, in your mind, to formulate words, and depending on how you say it, you can either make somebody mad or you can make somebody happy. So there's a lot of power there. In your actions, everything you do. They say for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. If I go up and punch somebody in the eye, chances are they're going to get mad and punch me right back in my eye. But if I go up and I talk to them and I explain to them things, and they have found interest in what I'm explaining to them, and they share their piece of the puzzle, Now we got something going on. We get something accomplished. Changing energy to a different form is just one of the pieces of the puzzle. I understand how to give the world free energy. The only thing I'm waiting for is the dream team. You want a free energy device? You want everybody out there to be on equal footing and be able to have electricity when they need electricity? Then join the dream team. Form your dream team in your neighborhood, and I will share everything I got open source with you. We have everything necessary to give the world free energy. And when I say free energy, I mean free electricity. And I don't want to sit around and argue with people and debate over whether or not, oh, you got to pay for the device so it's not free, blah, blah. Only an idiot would say that. Electricity is free. We live in an electric universe. We live on a thermal electric generator of epic proportions. Everything has protons, neutrons, and electrons according to science. There is oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen molecules flying through the air at 900 miles per hour. We are floating in a sea of free energy. If you want an engine that will run on pure distilled water using all the known laws of physics and not even in the least bit denying any of the laws of thermodynamics, then join the dream team and let's build it. It's that simple. If you want your free energy device, if you want the world to have a free energy device, at the very, very, very least, an energy device that is so incredibly efficient and has absolutely no waste, then let's build it. A super efficient generating system for every household is achievable using everything that we have available to us. And 90% of all the materials can be gotten right off the existing store shelves. The other materials we would need to manufacture. And those manufacturers means you need somebody who can run a milling machine. You need somebody who can run a lathe. You need somebody who can run a calculator. You need somebody who can do electronics. You need somebody who can do electrical. You need the dream team. That's what my YouTube channel's been about. That's why I do what it is that I do. And for as crazy as things may appear, every one of my videos was for a purpose. There was a method to my madness. Just like this platform right here, ShazizRadio.com, Shaziz.com, Shaziz.net, all were for a purpose. You gotta have a place to come together. You gotta have a place to communicate. We got tools like Skype. We got social media networks out there. And instead of people out there arguing and fighting with each other and wasting time while the elite basically do what it is that they're going to do, Your window of opportunity is closing, people. The window of opportunity to put the knowledge in the average Joe's hand is closing. And it's closing rapidly. There will come a day when you can't say these things on the radio. There will come a day when information will be completely suppressed. There will come a day when they will shut us down. And you will just do what the man says or die. That may sound crazy. It may sound tinfoil hat wearing conspiratorial or whatever. But it's the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. So, where do we go to from here? Well, I sent some links out because I'd like to be able to fund my research. But I will never, ever ask for anything without giving something in return. I put a link out there, and if you scroll around or you look around on the website, ShazizRadio.com, you'll find hearts, smiley faces, and red roses. And if you click on those, it will take you to my Shutterstock. And basically, there's pictures there offered for sale. So, if you like the pictures and you decide you want to download them, you can buy these pictures, you actually have something for what you just, for your money. Just by supporting me by buying one of these pictures right here, you can put some pennies in the bucket that would help me buy more materials to do more videos and to supplement my doggone internet service. Go look at these photos. They're beautiful. They're of wildlife. They're of seasons and trees. They're high quality. 4 megapixel. And these are pictures that my wife and I take, and we go out, we have an enjoyment of spending time together and taking beautiful pictures. But I figured, you know, it's hard to support a family, but it's even harder to try to fund research into alternative energy so that you can share all your findings with the world for free. But if you like artwork and you like nature and you like photography, heck, if you want, you can even go start your own account on there and become one of their contributors, and you can make money taking pictures. These pictures can be used royalty free for your websites or your projects, your videos. And so if you find one that has something to do with your video, when you buy that picture, it's yours to use as you want. So if you like what I'm doing here on the Mad Science radio show and on my YouTube and what it is that, and you want to help support me, there are little banner ads that says thank you with a smiley face and a heart on there. There are red roses here and there. One of them says love and beauty go hand in hand, share it with the world. You click on that and it will take you to that Shutterstock deal. And you buy a picture, I'll get a few pennies thrown in my bucket, and I will be able to go out to eBay and buy some of these things that I need for projects. See, I'm not wanting somebody to just donate me money. I don't want nobody giving me something for nothing. I want to give something back. And this is the only way that I could figure that if I was to be able to accept support from a community, that unless I had something to offer them, I wouldn't accept anything. So, who knows? Maybe I'll even try to do the t-shirts that say, Mad Science is the key to free energy. But if I did, I'm going to make sure it's done in a way that it's an affordable, fair price that they would be sold for. Otherwise, I'd just do something like throw a print out, which it's a possibility. I could actually use my Shutterstock account to see if I can do that. I don't know. They got these weird weird things going on. I'll see if I can figure out a way to do it. But if you're listening in and you like what you've heard here today and you want to hear more, then let me know. And if you do like artwork and photography and you want to do you want to help support my funding, because everything that goes on here I pay for myself. I don't ask for donations. There's probably one donation link on this entire deal, but it's hidden where nobody can find it. So that's because somebody told me, and I said, okay, yeah, I'll put one up there. And since I have to be a man of my word, I did. But I put it where it's you really got to be looking for it if you want to find it. It's not readily accessible, let's just say that. Anyway, because I don't want to take things from people. I don't want to take nothing from nobody without giving something in return. I want to see this world where everybody takes care of each other. I want to see people who need energy be able to have energy. You know, there's a lot of countries out there, poor countries, that don't even have electricity. Maybe they don't want it. That's fine. The Amish seem to do pretty good without it. But, you know, if they would like it, it'd be nice for them to be able to have it. So, why don't we, the people, why don't we come together and give it to them? Why don't we come together and utilize all these resources that we have available instead of putting them in the hands of the government and the elitists of the world and the corporations? Why don't we, the people, take back the control which we were supposed to have to begin with, to share with one another? I'm willing to share all the knowledge and everything. I'm not trying to patent or copyright or anything like that. I'm willing to share all my research and all my knowledge to try to benefit this world if I could just somehow or another pull off a miracle and form the dream team. People who want to get things done. People who really want to resolve the issues that we are told that we have. Folks, I'm saying we have every single answer. We have everything necessary to resolve all the problems of the world. The only thing that we're waiting on right now for free energy is the dream team to build the devices. That's it. If you take and just try some of the things that I talked about. Study up how a Van de Graaff generator works. Basically, you've got a couple different materials that when rubbed together produce static charge because they're exchanging electrons. And you need some sort of way to turn this deal to produce the friction of these two materials rubbing together. Could be something as simple as a cloth rubbing across some sort of acrylic or plastic or PVC. And then you have a way to guide that energy that you just put to a path to ground. And so if you got a windmill, you got a big old blade setting up in the wind, and it's turning a rotor, which is turning a belt that is then in turn turning this across a different type of material, and it has combs that will pick up the static electricity. You can build a windsurf or Van de Graaff generator style wind generator, and it will not have the resistance of the generator head while it's put underneath a load. And now you understand about how energy travels. You can guide that static electric charge across the spark gap, even a vacuum spark gap, so it's not interfered with by any wind or any kind of thing getting in between it. Or you can actually use that open air spark gap and incorporate the Venturi effect, that as that spark is getting ready to jump across that gap, it literally drags electrons in with it and amplifies that spark as it goes across, hits into a capacitor, and charges that capacitor plate where there's a potential difference now that that energy wants to go across the other side. Now, whatever you have connected to the other side is able to use that energy on demand. And you just made it more efficient because now you're not using it the standard model. I would be willing to travel if necessary, to talk to people. I would be willing to allow anyone to download every single podcast, every single video, and take them out there and do their own seminars and explain to them why it is that old Shaziz has crazy hair, why he calls it mad science, why it is he's saying the things that he says. If you have an environmental group that has a problem, invite them to the table. If you ask somebody out there, if we have the dream team sitting around the table and we're discussing these things and the solutions available, because believe me, there is a solution to every single problem. Getting people to the table, that's the one I haven't figured out the solution to. Well, how you doing there, Ted? Have you been listening in?
No, I just got all the cows in.
Ah! So...
So now I got time to listen to you.
Well, we got about a half an hour left of the show.
Okay.
Let me finish my thought with the people here. So anyway, folks, reach out to all those environmental groups. Reach out to any government official who'd actually pay attention. Put together an energy convention. Put together some sort of way to get the people together. Either give them a copy of the podcast or the videos or whatever. Make a t-shirt that says, let's see if I can find that doggone t-shirt again. It's on the... I can't even remember my own saying. Stinks when you get old. Hold on. Mad science is the key to free energy. That's it. Make you a t-shirt that says, when I get down there, I'm scrolling down on the podcast page. That's where I put a copy of that picture. Oh, man. Getting information out to the world's tough. And I got a lot of podcasts on there, so it's taken a long time to scroll down to the deal to find the actual picture, which I'm just now, I found it. Okay, cool. Open image and view image. There we go. Alright. I got a picture of a t-shirt that says, Mad Science is the Key to Truth About Free Energy. Ask me why, and it's got the website address on there. So, if you want to help me figure out a way to help the world and build the dream team, make you a t-shirt like that. Or you just write that phrase down on a piece of paper and stick it to a pole somewhere or a billboard, as long as it ain't considered vandalism in your area. It's hard to tell these days. If you nail a yard sale sign to a telephone pole, they'll charge you with it. Anyway, find out what your local laws and regulations are. Just make a little piece of paper and write that phrase down on a piece of paper and hand it off to somebody like you're passing a secret note to them, you know. I need to be able to fund my research, and so I offer to you some artistic pictures via Shutterstock. So the links are all over the website. They're not blatantly obvious, and I did post them into the chat room. But now that you heard it, that if you look on the chat, anywhere on the site, if you see a red heart or a red rose, or you see a smiley face with a thank you heart on there, or you click on that, that'll take you to where my pictures are. If you want to buy one of these pictures, then you throw a few pennies in the bucket, and I can use that for research and to help me fund my deal, because times is getting tough. But anyway, I'm not going to ask you for something unless I'm offering something in return. So, with that said, Ted... Today's subject was understanding energy, and I explained you might want to, if you get an opportunity, to go back and listen to this show again to get a general idea why it is that I did everything, why my YouTube was done the way that it was, why Shaziz Radio and Mad Science even exist, or Shaziz.com or Shaziz.net. For people out there who have never realized that there is a Shaziz.net, some of you might have stumbled onto it at some point in time, but never was really advertised. What Shaziz.net is it's going to be a landing page for proven technology, proven open source technology, non-copyrighted information that when the time is right, this is where I'm going to post some pretty cool devices that I've got stored in the background. All the plans and everything on how to do exactly what it is that I'm saying. Any new technologies or ideas is going to land on Shaziz.net. And so, there's actually... if you go on to the Super Chat Room... and you scroll all the way down, depending on what the resolution is on your screen, you'll find a banner at the very bottom that says things are not always as they appear. That's actually a link to Shaziz.net. It's been up there pretty much ever since Shaziz Radio's been up. So there's a lot of cool things stashed here and there that's been around for a long time that we just don't really advertise. So if you want a general idea what Shaziz.net is, you can go over there and peek around if you like. It's classified top secret, so don't tell anybody about it. All right? What do you think?
Hello.
Don't tell nobody, Ted, about Shaziz.net. But there is a method to my madness, and I'm trying to get the dream team together. That's what Shaziz YouTube was about. That's what Shaziz Radio is about. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is about. It's kind of like you got to test the water sometime, you know? You can't just go out there and tell people about a conspiracy world without trying to test the waters to see what they think. You don't even know if it's safe to even talk to them. You don't know who's a troll, who's a government dude, or whatever. But before you go lay on the line all your cards and you say, look, I invented this free energy device. Here it is. Let me give you a copy of it. You better know who you're talking to. Because if you could just hand it right over to them, they run right out and patent it in and nobody gets it. You see what I mean? Too many inventions out there have been suppressed by somebody buying up the patent and the copyright, and instead of its intended target, which was the people, then you don't get it. The people don't get it. And in order for the people to get it, you need a dream team that's together going to build said device. And once you got that group of people that all of them know this is how this is actually built, it works, it's proven, they put it on their site, and the other people put it on their site, and everybody spreads around, and all their viewers, they then know that it's proven, it works, here's the designs, everybody gets it. You see what I mean?
And I
tested the water with craziness. I put things out there, I put videos out there, and if the people take the time to read the description, look at the title, understand the makeup of the title, then when they watch that video, they would know what it was that I was trying to say and do. You gotta put something in front of somebody to open a dialogue. Do you think that this is possible, or do you think it's not possible? And if you think it's possible, how would you do it? If you think it's not possible, what do you think would stop you from being able to do it? So to be able to find those free thinkers out there, the actual people who are the ones that have the capability of creating said free energy device, then you need to know which one of them are going to come in there and call you every kind of mofos and idiots and stupid, and you don't know what you're talking about, you have no concept of physics, and you don't know nothing about the laws of thermodynamics, and you're just stupid, bleepity bleep bleep. Those are the ones you weed out. The ones that sit there and have a conversation with you is the ones that you want on the dream team. Make sense to you, Ted?
Absolutely.
That's why I did what I did. Because I want to find the best of the best of the free thinkers. I don't want somebody who's going to believe what I say. I want somebody who's going to work with me. If I got a flaw, they're going to tell me I got a flaw. If I got an idea, they are willing to help expand on that idea with their idea. Your idea and my idea together, we finally getting somewhere. But if they got an ego, or if they think that they're more intelligent than you or me, that's not somebody you want on the dream team. That's somebody who you want to be in the White House or one of the congressional seats, because their only job is to have that power structure of telling people what to do or how to think. I want Ted to think like Ted. I want to be able to think like me. I want you and me to be together and be that dream team that what I don't see, your two eyes pick up, or your mind figures out, and together we solve problems. Yeah, it's been a long journey to find a dream team, and I still haven't succeeded in bringing the dream team together. Because in the world of alternative energy, it is a dog-eat-dog world out there. You have fraudsters, you have pranksters, you have, the egos out there, you have the greedy out there, people who want to sell you something, control something, or whatever. And so, the dream team ain't about that. The dream team is coming together and sharing resources, sharing ideas, and getting stuff done. This looks like a couple compressors you got going on there.
Oh yeah, that's for you and the dream team.
Cool.
Start to work on taking two compressors and getting them looped to run each other there.
Right on.
Taking the start from one to run on the other, and the run from the other to start on the other. So you get the right capacitors in there to get the phase going, and get that one started. Once the other one kicks on, you can unplug it in order to keep going.
Well, I like the way you think. And even though the physics out there tries to reject perpetual motion or over unity or zero point, I don't even care about all that. If I had to take a supplementary system to make your system work, such as adding a solar or a wind or extra battery bank or a battery switching system or whatever, in order to compensate for any possible loss or flaw in the system, that would buy that time to where that thing could run 24/7, your design is worth going for. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. That's not my design. That's my friend's design.
Well,
but it's a beautiful concept.
Well, your friend would be good on the dream team, because anybody who thinks outside the box, that's what it's all about.
He's tried to start a dream team on Facebook.
Well,
it's called, you want me to tell you the name of the group?
Yeah, you can put it out there. And if you want, throw a link, and we'll throw that in the chat as well. Anybody who's out there trying to do this kind of stuff, I want to know about them. Stephen Gibbons went around, and he picked out the people, if you go up to the Super Chat room, and you scroll up to the top, there's a button up there to Stephen's resource page, and Stephen had took a long time and put a lot of resources on there for alternative energy researchers, alternative energy research, tons and tons of links. And he did an awesome job on this. And so there's resources there. So throw yours in there, and maybe Stephen will throw it up there on that page as well.
Okay. I'll look it up here for a minute.
But anyway,
yeah, it's nice to see people making dream teams.
Well, that's what we need. We need a dream team in every neighborhood. We need a dream team in every community. See, in your community, you got somebody who can run a lathe. You got somebody who can run a milling machine, a welder, all different types of welding. You got people in there who can do electrical. You got people who can do electronics. And if you find those people in your general area, and you guys build a middle ground, like some sort of garage where you guys can come together and work and build stuff, that's how things get created. Heck, if you want to look back at the internet and computer companies, most of these big companies started off in somebody's garage. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if these people want to get things done, if they want to open source things, see, if you open source something, this is one of the reasons why it used to drive me nuts, is that people wanted to get things copyrighted and patented. Anything that has to do with the energy world, you're going to come across all kinds of resistance from the power structure. But if you open source that deal, you would, when people realize that thing worked, you would just put something better than that device on the table for yourself, even better than money. Is credibility. You just put a name for yourself out there because this particular device, it works. And so there might be somebody want to pay you just to build them a prototype of it. There might be somebody who doesn't understand how to wire it together. You could still have a way to make money off of a design that you open sourced. Like, I would be willing to pay, if somebody out there was making Slayer slider circuits, I would be willing to pay them if they could put it on a real nice PCB board. Or even any of the Bedini circuits. Just for them to put it on a board, nice and neat, to where, you know, I don't have to use a breadboard, I'd be willing to buy those from them. You see what I mean? Because, you know, I can solder things together. My soldering's not very great, but it'll work. It just looks like heck. Use too much solder for one little joint or whatever. But if somebody wanted to manufacture those particular circuits and all these different, the flyback driver circuit, it's a real simple circuit. It's a transistor or a MOSFET. It's an IRZ 44 MOSFET or an IRF 3205 MOSFET to build a little... you know, flyback driver circuit would be ridiculously simple, you know, but if somebody put it on a PCB board where all you had to do is hook your input to one side and your output to wherever you wanted to, circuit you wanted to drive, that's worth money to me. It saves me time. So, even though it's an open source deal, somebody can still make money off that circuit. You see what I mean?
Right.
So, your dream team can fund itself. Your dream team could get funding from other people. And if somehow or another Shaziz's dream team gets extra funding, you know, via things that we're putting together, and they need funding, I'll ship money over to them just so that they can get done. That's what it's all about. I'm not in this to get rich. But if I had a if I had an account that was specifically for funding, and I knew somebody in Texas or whatever who had a dream team, and they needed funding for a specific project of materials, I would ship them the materials over. I'd go out there and buy them and have them ship right to them, just so that they can get it done. That's the whole thing.
Right, right on.
And if I got materials in my lab that I ain't going to use and that you need, I can ship them over to you. You know? So, dream teams working together, you know, from state to state, you know, shipping things back and forth, or, you know, documents, PDFs, or whatever, diagrams, schematics, back and forth via Skype, and this is the whole deal, is we have access to amazing technology right now. Skype, you can have live meetings with multiple people with video, and there are ways that you can live stream that same thing to multiple, even more bigger audiences, to where while I'm in my lab working, somebody could be live streaming that everything that's going on in that lab, so people can see it real time, and they can say, hey, look, that doesn't look so hard. I can try this over in my lab. And then another second lab could verify the work that we just done and say, yeah, this device that he just put out, it does work. And there ain't no debunking at that point. Any debunking at that point comes from trolls trying to break the system up. There's independent, peer-reviewed verification of said working devices that nobody can deny. And once that rabbit's out of the hat, so to speak, once Pandora's box is open, there's no way to get that information back out. So the system out there that she keeps trying to get rid of the John Bedinis and his brother and Teslas and Joseph Newman's
Well, somebody was telling me about a device yesterday that I guess somebody came up with in France, and they're trying to get it out to certain people in the world to duplicate it and try to make sure it gets into people that will give it away for free. But it's like one of those induction stovetop cookers.
Yeah.
2,000 watt Javi. And you crank it down to 1,000 watts, and you put a coil on top of the pancake coil that collects it and makes it into a 12-volt signal. And you send the 12-volt signal back to a grid tie inverter, the 2,500-watt grid tie inverter. And then once the signal is coming back, you can, I guess, kill the power on the induction stove and the input power, and it's still going to be running because that 12 volts coming off, it's enough to feed back into the inverter to run it. Yeah. And then you can still get a load with that.
Anytime there's an imbalance in nature, nature's going to balance it out. So if you get the process started, even the own physics, say objects at rest tend to stay at rest, objects in motion tend to stay at motion.
Right.
So there ain't no reason why energy, if you started off a domino deal and you could stand the dominoes right back up before they got back around, it would repeat the process over and over again. You see what I mean? And that would be a fun deal to build you a domino set that was on little tiny hinges. And when you trip them over, all you had to do was put a little air pressure, and it would stand them all back up. After they got past a certain point, it would stand each domino up on the way by. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see that.
But they say that there's too many losses, and you couldn't get something like that done. But who cares if you're trying to get it to do it by itself? If you got an outside force that's willing to stand them dominoes up, then you got two systems working together to complement one another, and so the dominoes will keep rolling around and standing up until the secondary source stops. And in the process of that, you could have a third source going on. and a fourth source and a fifth source, and you could have all these energy sources feeding in to continuously keep this thing going, and it would never stop. Could it be called perpetual motion? No, because you have an outside force. But the whole concept of perpetual motion was just put up there to make everybody think it wasn't possible to begin with. The laws of thermodynamics ain't used for nothing more than hindrance towards telling people things aren't possible when they are. So, what are you going to do with that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure do.
So anyway, if I have to have a windmill and a solar power to keep my free generator going, I don't care whether or not it could be called perpetual motion or not. If it keeps my lights on, who cares? That's why I did the Free Thinkers video series. That's why that thing has been out there running for 2 or 3 years now. I can't remember how long it's actually been, but if you go back and look at the Free Thinkers first video, that thing has been on to this very day. It's still running. And it's running off of everything from solar power to wind power to thermoelectrics to galvanic actions to radio signals, static electricity, negative ion generation, and Tesla technology. That thing has kept the lights on all this time. And I'm using old broken solar panels and dead batteries to do it with.
I watched that. I thought I had seen it when I talked to you, and I rewatched it. I hadn't seen it. It was good.
Well,
it was weird. I mean, I'll give you that. It was weird. I mean, that is a funky piece of junk you got there.
Well, the whole key, the word junk is the key. The key word that you use.
I know. Right there. I wouldn't be offended by that.
No, I'm excited that you use that word because it was intentionally made out of junk. It was intentionally made out of trash. Because if you can do that with trash, imagine what you could do with precision. You see what I mean? If I can get this thing to run for 2.5-3 years with just using recycled trash, not one of those batteries, you couldn't start your car with it if you wanted to. Because those batteries aren't working like that natural battery anymore. All the electrolytes is dried up and the batteries are corroded and all that kind of stuff. What those batteries have become as they ended up dying was quite literally capacitors. Think about what it takes to make a capacitor. What's it take to make a capacitor?
A dielectric material.
Yeah.
And two conductive materials.
That's right. Now, what happens if all the battery acid is dried up out of a battery? What's that battery missing?
Water, dielectric.
Yeah. So now what's it gained?
Capacitance? It's gained the ability. I don't know what it's gained there. I mean, I know what you're saying, that air is a dielectric, but I don't understand what it's actually gained, like the ability to discharge faster, I guess, because it's air instead of water. I don't know.
It just turned into a capacitor. The battery acid is gone, which was the electrolyte. The dielectric is the atmosphere between the plates.
Oh, I
see. So, even where it ain't good for one form of energy, which is DC current with some watts and amps to it, it is now good for static charges that when those two plates are charged, you know, one's off balance, then that energy wants to balance itself back out. It's never able to balance itself back out until you short across those terminals. But since it's already connected to a load, it is being used as a battery, even though it's not a battery any longer. Do you understand that?
Yep.
So
you turn people's junk into usable stuff.
That's right.
There's a lot of junk batteries around, and you don't get too much for them these days.
Two aluminum cans make a capacitor.
Don't get me wrong, it hasn't stopped a bunch of people from coming over and cutting all my terminals and all my equipment and taking my batteries, but you don't get that much for them.
Nope. Yep, see, that's the thing, man. There's no such thing as a junk battery anymore. Drain all the battery acid out, leave it open to the air, make a static charging bank out of it, so that whenever static electricity is coming down there, you still have the positive, you still have the negative plates, and the air in between it is the dielectric now. So in order for it to jump from the positive plate to the negative plate, it first has to be able to break down the air in between there. And since it's harder to break that down, you got to have thousands of volts in order to break across the air to jump across those plates. Those plates will not short. That means any static charge that's put up on the positive or the negative post, the higher potential is going to want to go to the lower potential. And if your spark gap that you're using from that capacitor is shorter than the distance of those plates of being across from each other, then that means it'll be able to break across that short spark gap before it ever gets a chance to break across the wider difference between the plates, and so you can guide that energy where you want it to go. So a dead battery with no battery acid in it just became a capacitor using the air as a dielectric, and the dielectric is only in order to keep the plates separated so they don't short themselves out, right or wrong.
Okay.
The electrolyte in the battery, aka battery acid, is what makes the battery work as a battery. But when it's dry as a bone, and you think that battery still cannot be charged because it has dead cells, the only dead cell would be the ones that are touching each other. The positive and negative cell that are touching each other would be a dead cell. So if you got crud down in your battery, and that one plate will, those two plates down there, positive and negative plate, will become one cell. Or one plate, because they're in contact with each other. But the rest of them are still good because of the way that they're run. So you could still hold a static charge in a dead battery. And that's the way it works. Inside that box that's in the Free Thinkers video are AC capacitors and DC capacitors and a charging system. That any battery that will hold any remnants of a charge until it goes bone dry will still hold an electrical charge. And so it's continuously putting energy somewhere, via radio signals, via galvanic action from two dissimilar types of metals, earth battery technology, static electricity generation, negative ion generation, several different windmills that are set up to go in different polarities, and it was made completely out of junk.
And don't forget your dielectric impulses.
Yep. Oh yeah, not to mention the Tesla coil, the giant Tesla coil on the other side. Where's the radio signals come from? It comes from the air. It also comes from when the electric fence charger pulses from the sun. It shoots a spark down through the system that then in turn shoots a spark across the gap that pulses that Tesla coil, which sends out a magnetic wave, a magnetic field wave, a radio wave, or whatever you want to call it, and bounces into an antenna system that has a germanium diode that's really good for, catching radio waves. It's pretty amazing. And it's made out of trash. Huh. Alright. So, looks like we're down to it, man. You got any last thoughts there, Ted?
Somebody was telling me that when Tesla came up with his New York, when they were using the dam in New York to make the power.
Yeah.
He was only getting 4,000 volts DC. I mean, only, but, you know, it wasn't enough to run the city.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody wants to look into all Tesla's different ideas, so many different induction things, so many different, you know, Tesla coil this, but if you just read his power distribution and understand how he distributed power, well, there's a lot right there, because he was taking the Y transformer and splitting that and using earth ground reference, stepping it up, and that gave him the ability to give all the electricity he never needed to New York City, or wherever New York, the city of New York, he was powering over there with the dam.
That's right, and because of Tesla, I understood the Venturi effect even more when it's in reference to how a spark gap actually functions. Because if you take your back of your hand, which is really sensitive, and you put it right next to the spark gap up there, right before that spark leaps across that gap, you can feel a negative ion wind being produced right there at that spark gap. So it's actually dragging energy in with it, making that spark, when it gets across there, yet even more powerful. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and that kind of reminds me of the Y connection with the earth ground reference.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, right there.
Tesla, if you actually pay attention to what Tesla's showing you, he showed a lot more than people out there realize what he showed them. He not only showed them wireless energy, but he showed you how energy actually travels and how you can actually propagate a wave out to send this wave out to do, you know, to actually send radio signals and data and all kinds of stuff. And you can actually use resonance with these waves to quite literally cause vibrations and things. So even if you just wanted to build a really super strong base cannon, and you're just thumping this base cannon, and this base cannon is surrounded by a bunch of piezoelectrics, and you know as these piezoelectrics are sitting there vibrating, they're producing electricity, and in the process of those producing electricity, you've also got these other things that are catching a wave as they come past the piezoelectric, which is rubber bands that are got magnets on there that are going in and out of coils, inducing another current. And so the harder you push this base on this deal, and it's going back and forth like that, you're producing electricity using everything that would have otherwise been a waste coming off of that system. What do you think of that?
Is that the heavy metal version? What is that?
Yeah.
What you call that?
You sit there and play your bass guitar and you're generating electricity, man. So, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. Folks, I gotta go. My mind is on fire. I got a headache because I got hit in the head. I stepped up on a ladder and got hit with a doggone ceiling fan yesterday. That was a dumb idea. Don't do that, Ted.
This thing's moved too, bro.
Yeah, it about clocked me. I got hit with two blades before I got out of the way, but I learned my lesson.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you like what you hear on this particular podcast or any other podcast, download the podcast, chop out the sections that you want to share, re-upload it on your own channel, rebroadcast it, pass it down the line, do whatever you want with it. If you got a video on there and I'm making a crazy face and you want to make a meme out of it and tell the world I'm crazy as all get out, then do it. It doesn't matter. None of this stuff is on here is copyrighted. None is patented. Everything's ideas and information, and it's free for anybody to take whichever direction they want, whether good or bad. I hope you take it in a good direction, because that'll be a plus towards what we're trying to accomplish. Build your dream team. Share this podcast with somebody. Share a picture or design. If you see a design on the Mad Science Podcast page and it looks like it has a flaw in it, download the picture, replace the flaw, upload the picture, and I'll put it back up on the site with your corrections on there. That's how it works. And then we'll share it with everybody and his brother. And when the dream teams are in every single town, in every single nation, then we will take all the solutions that are available. I had somebody tell me one time, oh, well, you guys talk, and nobody ever gives any solutions. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to go out there and make the cake, ice the cake, cool it down, cut the cake, put it on a saucer, and hand it to you? Or would you like to join me, and we enjoy making the cake and doing this and sharing it together? That's the thing. I'm not a baker, so if I make you a cake, you're liable to get sick. I am definitely not a cook. But what I do know is I understand, I got a mechanical understanding of how things work, how nature functions, and I'm willing to share every bit of my piece of the puzzle with you. And when you do the same, we make the big picture a reality. And I want to see this world in a better state of affairs than it is, and that's why I do what I do. So I want people to have fresh water. I want people to have food when they need it. I want them to have shelter. I want them to have the comforts and the luxuries that we all are, so blessed to enjoy. So if you put together a doggone place and you need this crazy guy to come there personally, I'll probably do some traveling and I'll come and stand there and I'll have a talk, this same talk with them live. Or if you got a podcast and you want to put it in a convention out there and have people listen to it, I'm trying to gather the dream team is what I'm trying to do, because the dream team is the only way that we will ever get things done. Government ain't going to do it for you. Corporations ain't going to do it for you. Big business ain't going to do it for you. And the elite aren't going to do it for you. It's going to take the dream team, which is you, and me. That's the way it works. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you share this podcast. And if you want to, if you don't want to support Shaziz Radio, but you do like art, click on that rose or the heart with the smiley face and the thank you sign on it. Click on there. Just go take a look and then throw a message in the chat room and say, you know what? I saw your pictures. They look nice. Stephen Gibbons said, cool pics, Shaziz. Thank you, Stephen. Me and my wife took those pictures. And we figured, if we can throw a few pennies in the bucket to help supplement our income and to help me basically finance this mad science. If I go out and buy some things, when I get a few pennies out, go out on eBay and get some copper wire or some circuits that I need to make videos, then that's the way you can help me out. And as far as the t-shirt, I'm not making and selling these t-shirts, but if I could, I would. But you can make your own t-shirt. Write it. We'll get you a Sharpie in your favorite color t-shirt and have your artist friend draw it on there. But it says on this this shirt, says Mad Science is the key to truth.
We can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.